Our governor calls Utah the startup capital of the world. And it tracks. We've got a fast-growing, well-educated population and a buzzing economy. And just last week, Utah unveiled the Startup State Initiative, a resource portal for entrepreneurs. From step-by-step guides to a business plan generator, startup.utah.gov is now the first stop for starting or growing a business here. That's startup.utah.gov. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. At 10:24 p.m. on Friday night, Senate President Stuart Adams declared sign, die, which means Utah's 2023 legislative session is over. Since January, state senators and representatives have passed 575 bills and a $29 billion budget. It's a lot. So we are breaking down how it all impacts your life over two episodes with Fox 13's Ben Winslow. Today, part one, the Great Salt Lake, liquor laws, and healthcare. It's Tuesday, March 7th. I'm Ali Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Ben Winslow, perhaps Salt Lake's most exhausted, decorated, and fashionable reporter on Capitol Hill.
Exhausted is right.
Exhausted is right. Ben Winslow, you always say that when it comes to most issues in our state, all roads lead to the Capitol. This, I feel like, is a Winslowism.
It is true, though. Where's the lie?
Right. So let's go through some of the biggest concerns that Salt Lakers have, and you tell me what the legislature did about them. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Okay, let's start with the Great Salt Lake. So the water level at the Great Salt Lake has reached a historic low. This puts Salt Lake in grave danger of an environmental crisis. What did the legislature do to save the lake?
The legislature did a lot, but it really depends on who you're talking to. Certainly, legislative leaders feel like they are taking very proactive steps that will help the lake. And environmental groups say that, yes, these measures will in the long term. Where the divide is the short term. Lawmakers appropriated about $500 million for a lot of big things that are designed to get water into the lake. You've got $200 million for agriculture optimization, which is new technology that helps farmers grow crops with less water. It's pretty expensive stuff to implement, but I've been out on farms and it works. It cuts water use. It's really helpful. That's a lot of money that will really get to a lot of agriculture producers, not just in the Great Salt Lake Basin, but statewide. And the legislature certainly believes that this is a really good measure. There's a lot more money that went to water conservation measures. Turf buyback incentives got expanded statewide. There were some bills that tell HOAs you can no longer demand lush green lawns when we're in a desert. Yeah. So those got through. There were some bills that didn't, some pretty noteworthy bills. That target level certainly got environmentalists riled up. This resolution that just basically said, let's set a target goal. This is our minimum threshold for the Great Salt Lake, never got through. There were other bills. There was one that would have banned outdoor lawn watering from October 1st to April 25th, died on the last night of the session. A lot of senators had some heartburn and angst over that bill, even though it had been effectively, no pun intended, watered down. It originally had fines imposed in it, and it originally demanded that any conserved water get shepherded into the Great Salt Lake. That bill died last night of the session. The biggest bill that lawmakers advanced, this Great Salt Lake Commissioner, I dubbed that a Great Salt Lake Czar. This is one person who's supposed to oversee the entire state agencies that deal with the lake. And there are a lot of different groups and agencies that do this. So this is kind of a central point person. They oversee this multi-million dollar trust that's designed to buy or lease water rights for the lake itself. So they're going to be the point person. They're going to be appointed by the governor. They also answer to the legislature as well on what they're doing to help save the Great Salt Lake. And legislative leadership insists that's a critical bill that will get water into the lake. But if you talk to environmental groups, they have not been impressed by the short term, what happened here, because none of these bills explicitly say put water into the lake. even though the effects of this legislation might be getting water into the lake. And of course, from their view, time is of the essence.
Okay. Well, I mean, I saw that the Save Our Great Salt Lake Coalition was standing on the steps of the Capitol near the end of the session, unveiling a truly, like, they printed a long list of demands. One of them was, as you mentioned, set a target level for the lake. They want to see co-stewardship of the lake with tribes. Do you think lawmakers heard them in the final days, or do you think lawmakers said, what do you mean? We've done a ton.
I think that there are certainly, they've been listening to environmental groups as concerns, but as far as the specific list of demands in the final days of the session, they're dealing with so many issues. It's hard to say if that laundry list, as it were, resonated with them or even really reached them.
Yeah.
But I talked to Republicans and Democrats who insisted they were working hard to try to help the lake and try to make sure that these bills passed and that these big bills got through.
All right, let's move on and talk about liquor laws, which I think is your, like, I wish you were the liquor czar for the state of Utah, because this is like definitely one of your beats. You always are able to make sense of liquor policy. How did the legislature make Salt Lake less boring next time Charles Barkley comes to visit?
Well, that, again, is going to depend on your perspective.
Oh, I see a theme emerging.
It really is. And that would be the theme of the legislative session, I think, overall, is how you view the state or how you view the world through the lens that you view it. You either think it's good or it's bad. My job is to tell you what is. So,
okay.
So what happened with liquor policy this year is you have every year the omnibus bill. And this is sort of the bill that handles all liquor policy. And there are two people who are tasked by the Republican supermajority with drafting the liquor legislation, the omnibus bill. That doesn't mean any other lawmaker can't run them. And we certainly have seen those bills, but those bills typically don't get very far because they're not, shall we say, blessed. So what you have is, in this particular version, we've had so much growth. We've had so many new restaurants opening up, a lot of new businesses coming in.
Yeah.
Restaurants like liquor licenses because, you know, they can sell and it helps them. But because of this growth, we were running out of restaurant licenses. Bar licenses have always been chronically short, and it's been hitting critical mass. There's too many people who want these licenses and not enough licenses to give out. Should point out, bar licenses are an arbitrary quota, one license per 10,200 people. That's how it is. So what you got out of the final draft of the bill, and the numbers were always changing through negotiations, you got 15 new bar licenses, I believe 35 new full-service restaurant licenses. There is a new type of banquet restaurant license if a restaurant wants to have a private party. However, if they want to have one of those banquet licenses for the private party area, you've got to build an opaque wall.
An iron curtain.
Don't call it a Zion curtain, though, because, oh man, when I did, boy, did I hear about it. but it is a Zion curtain by any other name. It is an opaque wall. They want the party separate from the rest of the restaurant. So you got that in the bill. Flavored beers, they did finally rework this issue. Utah has a legal definition of beer, and it is a unique legal definition of beer. So they reworked it so that flavored beers, your White Claws, your Shock Tops, you know, your BL Limes, those
right,
can stay on grocery and convenience store shelves. There was this issue last year where Claw was not the law because how it was brewed or how it was created did not meet the legal definition of beer, so it went to a state-run liquor store. So we'll see how the definitions work out and if some of those products that went from grocery convenience store shelves into state-run liquor stores go back to grocery convenience store shelves. Hmm. That was a big provision of the law.
Okay, there's one that I saw was in this omnibus bill getting discussed that's very important to me, which is the future of mini bottles.
Mini bottles are banned.
No, they were supposed to come back this year, Ben.
Right.
That was the plan.
So last year, the legislature said, hey, DABS Commission, you settle this. We don't need to legislate this. You settle this. So the DABS Commission did a study. They did an administrative rules process, which has the same effect of law, but it's not really law. And then they took a whole bunch of public comment. Public comment was in favor of legalizing mini bottle sales. They were all set to do this. Then the legislature intervened again and said, no, no, we got this. And so then they banned them.
Why does the legislature handle liquor policy and an omnibus bill? Why is it specific to liquor laws that they do it this way historically?
They actually do this with a number of policy issues. But this is one of the ones where you have, we are state-controlled liquor. So it's a liquor control issue. You also have a lot of stakeholders who have very strong feelings about them. You have faith groups, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints being one of them. You have alcohol prevention groups, you have hospitality groups. And there certainly is a view that we don't want to be like a lot of other states, that this is one of the things that makes our quality of life great. At least this is the view that has been explained to me of why we do these things. The reason they also run these in omnibus bills is because then you avoid having every lawmaker who has a particular feeling on this topic or a view on this topic basically running their own bill, and then you have conflicting statutes and you have conflicting issues. And that still happens, but it's to a much lesser extent now. We've had many, many beer delivery, wine of the month club type bills also run, and you know, to avoid conflict with other statutes or to avoid conflict with the whole temperance model liquor policy that we have, that's why they typically omnibus this.
If I say to you, I need to improve my posture, chances are you are groaning back at me, ugh, same. And if you're open to changing that, connect with Chandler at Embodied Patience. She teaches the Alexander Technique, an educational method for understanding our movement habits. The Alexander Technique has long been a favorite of stage actors and musicians, people with famously good posture, and now Chandler's practice makes it available to all Salt Lakers. I work at a desk, and I spent a decade sleeping on memory foam. My spine is doing its absolute best. And when I spent an hour with Chandler, I was surprised how easy it actually is to stand up straight, if you're doing it right. There was a weightlessness that I didn't see coming, and very gentle considerations made my arms feel longer and my head feel taller. Visit embodiedpatience.com to connect with Chandler and learn how to move with more ease, less pain, and more joy. Okay, I want to talk about healthcare because we saw some big healthcare related bills this year. So, of course, top of mind for me, after Roe v. Wade was overturned, Utah's been batting around all kinds of legislation related to abortion and maternal healthcare. What is the new law? And is it going to get stuck in the courts?
I think a lot of these pieces of legislation will just default go to court from here on out. And I talked to Mary Taylor of Pro-Life Utah on the last night of the session, and she pretty much expects the same thing, that no matter what happens from here on out, somebody's going to sue. What we have under the laws that passed is clinics will close later this year once the governor signs the bill into law, and he told me that he will. Abortions in cases of rape or incest will be performed in hospitals or medical clinics only. Supporters of this legislation say that this is basically to comport with the trigger law that is now in effect, which again is still being litigated. And, we may see a trip to the Supreme Court pretty soon on that one. But that's where we are with that particular piece of legislation. And I do fully expect a lawsuit to be filed from someone over the latest bills that passed out of the session on that. You also have, I believe it just makes it so that Utah's abortion ban after 18 weeks is now ironclad because it's basically in a series of laws now. So whether or not that also is legally challenged, you know, remains to be seen. But, certainly that's where we are with that particular piece of legislation.
Okay. So because I find this so confusing, I'm going to repeat back to you how I understand it and you tell me if I'm right. Currently, because all of these laws that have passed are either not yet in effect or tied up in courts, abortion is legal in Utah up to 18 weeks. Though, if this slate of laws makes it through the courts and otherwise, all abortion clinics in Utah will be closed. The only abortions that will be performed in Utah will be in hospitals. They would be in cases of rape or incest that are proven with, for example, a police report. And
they would only be performed up to 18 weeks, even in cases of rape or incest. Is that correct?
As I understand it, there's also the provision for health and safety of the mother.
Of the mother, as determined by a doctor, which there's, as I understand, it's still quite vague. How?
And this may all be litigated yet over again. And then you may see more legislation to clarify exactly, you know, what this all means. And that's certainly been something that opponents of these particular bills have been arguing, is that there is no specificity. There's no real addressing individual circumstances that someone may find themselves in that needs this. And is there enough exceptions, or is there enough, you know, wiggle room in those exceptions to allow for someone to get an abortion?
Yeah. Okay, the other big healthcare related issue is related to trans people. The legislature has made a habit recently of passing legislation related to the health and wellness of trans people. What came down the pike this session?
So what you saw was what was termed a moratorium on gender-affirming healthcare for transgender youth, that basically anyone under 18, if you are seeking hormone treatments, puberty blockers, if you are a new patient, you are not able to obtain that right now. That is on a temporary timeout, although LGBTQ rights groups have said that this is a de facto ban. But this is while everybody says that they want to look at regulation, look at licensure, so that not just anybody is doing this kind of medical procedures or healthcare. There was also built into that law a ban on gender-affirming surgeries for minors, although people who practice medicine in this field say that wasn't even being done anyway, but it codifies that into law. So that's essentially the bill that passed there. The governor did sign that because it passed very early in the session, and so he was kind of on the clock. He signed that on the same day that he signed the bill on school choice scholarships and teacher salaries. So it was sort of a big beginning of the session. If people weren't paying attention to the early days of the session, they actually got their controversies, their major bills that typically draw a lot of debate, a lot of controversy. They got those done very early so they could move on to other issues.
Which is unusual. It does feel like the hot bills, usually it's the 11th hour that they kind of get rammed through.
It's true. And that was the case in many sessions. What we heard from people on the Hill, legislative leadership, is, well, we get criticized for, why are we doing this on the last days of the session? Why are we doing this on the last hours of the session? We have other things we need to focus on. So they said, fine, we'll move these things to the beginning, have the debates, and then the bills passed. You know, there was sort of also a little bit of criticism that, did these hearings give a full vetting? Did these pieces of legislation, you know, follow all the process? And by and large, yes, they did. They all got hearings, floor debates, everything like that. But yeah, there was definitely a change in strategy in terms of how they address these bills that, you know, certainly draw a lot of attention, a lot of scrutiny. One thing on the abortion legislation, there were some bills that did pass that it sounds like a lot of people are really happy about postpartum medical care that got expanded in Utah. Children's health insurance got expanded in Utah. When it comes to these areas of health care and family care, there is also now a Medicaid expansion for family planning services, too. And what we heard on the floor was some very anti-abortion lawmakers very much supporting these bills, because they said, if we are a pro-life state, we should start acting like one and do this and pass these very pro-family, in their views, bills. And these are bills that many Democrats on Utah's Capitol Hill have been championing for years. They've really pushed for, and they got through this year. The CHIP bill was a big one. Medicaid expansion services for women postpartum, for family planning, things like that. They were big bills.
Yeah. It was a good year for doulas.
Yes. That was another one that made it through. There was no Medicaid expansion granted for doula services, but doula services were expanded in the state in other forms of legislation.
Yeah. I do want to touch on that CHIP expansion that you brought up, because Utah has one of the highest rates of uninsured children in the nation. Voices for Utah Children estimates it's about 82,000 kids. So this healthcare coverage expansion, specifically to kids who are not citizens, so they would not previously have been eligible for Medicaid, is massive. And I was a non-U.S. citizen kid, so it would have been great for me. But yeah, I think that is really good news.
It is big. Yeah, Senate Minority Leader Luz Escamilla said that she worked 3.5 years to try to make that happen. And it finally happened. She was very, very happy. And she said it's going to do a lot of good. It's going to help a lot of people. So yeah. While certainly some people feel like these bills that passed on abortion were bad bills, you know, other people feel like these bills that passed, you know, if that's the, you know, particular perspective you come from, that though these other bills, these are very good bills.
Yeah. Fox 13 reporter Ben Winslow, thank you for your good reporting. We just scratched the surface here. I will see you tomorrow for part two.
Sounds great.
Something else the legislature pulled off this session? Naming two new official state things. The brine shrimp is now the official state crustacean, and the porcini is now the official state mushroom. Oh, and we have a new state flag. It seems like everyone but Senator Dan McKay, who sponsored the flag bill, is unsatisfied with it. In the final hours, the ledge also rammed through a bill declaring it open season on Utah mountain lions for in-state and out-of-state hunters all year round. No tags required, just a hunting license. It would upend the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources' very carefully crafted cougar management plan. Now, even generational hunters are begging the governor to veto it. It's HB 469. It is estimated that Utah's population of mountain lions is anywhere from 1,600 to 2,600. Hard to count because they're sneaky and smarter than us and hard to track. Fortunately for them, maybe they'll make a den in the Senate chamber. That's all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. We'll be back tomorrow morning with part two of our legislative recap, covering housing and homelessness, education, and even some gondola-related sleuthing. See you tomorrow.